Today is the final of six sermons in a post-Easter sermon series. And these sermons over these last weeks have focused on admittedly difficult and intentionally difficult issues that will come to all of our lives at some time or another. Hard issues that can become like stones keeping us emotionally and spiritually sealed in death-dealing tombs, unable to step into this promise of resurrection and new life in our own lives. Hard issues like grief and loss, unresolved anger, guilt, toxic shame, and ultimately, for the release of burdens of pains, traumas, bitterness, and resentment, that core necessary spiritual practice of forgiveness, which can feel as hard as stone. So, feel that stone in your hand. It is small, probably far smaller by comparison than some of the stones that block us and you from new life. As you feel the hardness of that stone, what is its name in your life? What is this stone that remains to be rolled away? By the grace and power of God, God is poised and ready to roll that stone away and raise us to new life. But sometimes we grip the stone from inside the tomb. Nothing and nobody is getting out. Okay, maybe it's a little dark, maybe it's a little stinky in here, but it's just fine. Thank you very much. I'll stay. During this post-Easter season, to really more fully step into new life, dare we say to the stone, to those hard issues, dare we even pray to God, roll away the stone. Today, in the cycle of the Christian church year, this is considered the final Sunday of the Easter season. It's the end of telling the post-resurrection stories of Jesus annually, and it is a necessary prelude to the celebration of Pentecost, which happens next Sunday. We're going to have a good time come next Sunday. Today is called Ascension Sunday. Now, if you were raised in a church tradition, you might recall or you might remember reciting creeds of the church, quite old, ancient creeds, centuries old, the Nicene Creed or the Apostles' Creed. Some of you can still recite it if you press the right button. But you will recall that one of the affirmations in those creeds is that Jesus, quote, ascended into heaven. And that is the event that's described in the story that we hear today. And quite simply put, or not so simply put, the statement seeks to describe in words an affirmation that Jesus Christ, while physically absent, while we experience the physical absence of Jesus Christ, he remains a living presence. And there is also a promise of experiencing that presence through the empowerment of the Spirit. Like so many of our theological statements, it tried to solve a dilemma of all kinds of affirmations that we make. The ascension story of Jesus is actually the farewell scene and the final words of Jesus in Scripture. And there are three accounts of this farewell scene that we have in the Bible. At the end of the Gospel of Mark, of Luke, which we hear today, and it's at the very beginning of the book of Acts. And depending upon the version of this final scene, the resurrected but still earthly Jesus either appears to his followers where they are or leads them out of the city and offers words of blessing, commissioning, sending them, and includes a promise of the coming Holy Spirit. And then in each of those versions, Jesus is lifted or taken up into cloud or into heaven. Hence, it is called the Ascension. So following this astonishing event, in Luke and Acts, we get a couple of other interesting details. Here in Luke, we're told that the disciples left and they returned to the temple, praising and worshiping God, filled with joy at being left behind. And in Acts, there's this other detail that the disciples stand there looking upward. Maybe surprise, maybe a whole new wave of grief. And then there are two figures that appear and ask this question, why do you stand there looking into heaven? So let us admit, in our modern world, this is an odd and a pretty difficult scene to get our heads around, to believe happening literally as described. You know, for me, one of the problems is, well, exactly how far up do you go to get to heaven? Is it as far as the moon? Is it Mars? Which star? Which galaxy? How far up is quite up? But as with much of the Bible, we need not take it literally to take it seriously. Let me say that again. We need not take it literally to take it seriously. Does the ascension communicate any meaning that we can take seriously? And to me, it has to be more than a moment of a kind of beam me up, Scotty kind of Jesus, or a gravity-defying superhero Jesus. It has got to mean more than that. Now, if you're familiar with the post-resurrection stories about Jesus, you may recall a strange detail. Not only, as in this story, not only do the gospel writers take great pains to describe that the resurrection body of Jesus, while different from ours, is not a ghostly disembodied spirit, but still physical, a physical body in some respects. It may be able to pass through doors, but it is touchable, and in this story, still even eats food. And the other detail, the post-resurrection body still bore the wounds of the crucifixion. It's alluded to in this passage from Luke, where Jesus twice is said to have shown his hands and feet. For whatever reason, for what reason other than the fact that those wounds were some evidence of his identity? It's even more explicit if you remember in the Gospel according to Mark, where Jesus appears to Thomas and even says, "Here are the nail marks in my hand and the sword where it pierced my side." It seems so counterintuitive, doesn't it? If there's going to be a glorious new resurrection body of Jesus and by extension of us, why are the wounds still there? We want to, in our lives, press some kind of rewind button or click the undo function. We want a magic wand that will erase what has happened to make the past somehow not be true anymore. But what we get instead with resurrection is not pains and hurts that are purged and erased, but that are transformed and embraced. Not purged and erased, but transformed and embraced. It seems the wounds will always be part of the story. They can't be erased like nothing ever happened. The wounds, the pains, the hurts, the traumas, the losses are in fact real. And even when they are healed and overcome, they are always in fact part of the story. The risen Christ showed his wounds as a way of proving that he was actually still himself. But when resurrected and transformed, they may have been some kind of identification, but they ceased to define the story. They were part of a new story that was being written. The story didn't end with the pain and the violence and the shame of the cross, nor did it end with the grim loss and the cold grief of the tomb. It was resurrection that defined the story now. The ascension that we hear today is a scene from the Bible that lots of artists have painted or rendered in other media because of its really dramatic and otherworldly qualities. And in many of those images, the disciples are shown staring up in amazement and wonder, and in some of them, all you can actually see are the feet of Jesus. The rest of him somehow embraced in a cloud or sort of looking up the skirt, whatever. That all you see is the very bottom of the feet of Jesus. Now, as silly and naive as that sounds, those images actually depict something about the ascension that, if we take it seriously, is really quite theologically profound. The ascension was a bodily event. A bodily event. Now, on one hand, Jesus was drawn into this holy mystery beyond sight and comprehension, but on the other hand, while this was all happening, the whole time, from top of head to bottom of the soles of his feet, a body the whole time. In the incarnation, Christians affirm that God became human flesh, reaching to us as Jesus in flesh and blood and bone. And it turns out that that is not some kind of skin suit. That even when it's transformed in resurrection, it isn't something that got peeled off in order to disembodied go into a spiritual realm from whence it came. At the ascension, it was the physical, bodily humanity of Jesus in all of its beauty and all of its brokenness with its crucifixion wounds still gathered up and embraced into the boundless eternal being of God. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. A lot of you will remember a great old happy clappy gospel hymn, "I'll Fly Away." I'll fly away. Oh, yeah, we know it. Good. Yeah. We'll have just a moment. Yeah. There you go. Sing out. "I'll Fly Away." It surely reflects, one, the wonderful promise that there is always hope and hereafter. But it also reflects our sincere desire to escape from the weariness and suffering of the wounds that we experience in the past and the present. But what if, like when Jesus, quote, flew away at the ascension, what if those things actually aren't left behind? We may want them to be left behind, but what if they aren't left behind? But rather, what if they are drawn up with us, gathered up into the eternal presence and being of God? The depth of the meaning of all of the moments in our story, even the most painful and difficult moments in our lives, maybe the meaning is hidden for now, but it is embraced and bathed in the revealing light and the love of God. Your story, our story, is not over yet. Don't you and we and probably everybody we know, don't we yearn to no longer be trapped by the past? Feel that stone in your hand. Will the devastation of earthquakes be the end of the story for the people of Nepal? In the U.S., don't police officers and communities of color dream of a future where their story isn't defined any longer with enmity, fear, and death? Isn't it because they don't want their stories to be forever defined by poverty, oppression, and violence that immigrants displaced from Africa, Syria, South Asia, and Latin America cast themselves into an unknown future and risk their very lives to have a new story? What will their story and your story, our story, be? If the story of Jesus is any clue, if it is a way that we follow by the power and grace of God, it's a story of being released from the grip of death and released from the power of the past, a story of being raised from the tomb and raised to the sky. I'll invite Reverend Diane to offer a few words and describe what we will do with that stone in our hands and the paper as well.
As Nathan said, over the course of the last about 5 or 6 weeks, I guess, we've talked about some very difficult things. Things that have kept us locked in our tombs, unable to roll away the stones that keep us from resurrection and new life. For some of us, one or more of these topics have been painful, but have also made us aware of our imprisonment behind those particular stones. For others, it was painful because we were not yet ready to acknowledge we even had stones needing to be rolled away. Our hope, Nathan and Darren and I, our hope is that we helped you open your tombs a crack, at the very least, and at the very most, by claiming the power of forgiveness, you've been helped to roll away one or more of those stones. We talked about grief and loss. We talked about unresolved anger, shame, and guilt. This list is definitely not inclusive. There are many things that we did not talk about that keep us entombed, unable to roll away the stones, that keep us under the power of judgment, prejudice, hate, addiction, mental illness, to name just a few. Then we talked about forgiveness, the power that can roll away that stone. We invited you to use forgiveness as a tool for letting go and emerging from behind our stones. Now we need some closure. And in order to do that, we are inviting you to participate in a simple ritual. You have your stones. Let me see them. You have your papers. Very good. On that paper, we would ask you to write something that has kept you locked away behind a stone and from which you want to emerge. As you've sat with the stone in your hand, and we hope you have named that stone, because that stone has yet to be rolled away. But it will be today. As you are led, take your paper and rock up to the stage. Nathan and I will go first. One receptacle on the your far left is for the sole purpose of burning your piece of paper, symbolizing the letting go of the woundedness, its power over you, and its ascension to God. The other receptacle is for you to place your stones in the water, symbolizing the rolling away a stone that keeps you entombed. Name that stone. Now, this is strictly voluntary. If you wish to hold on to your stone and or paper and take them home with you as you prayerfully consider what to write on the paper and what to name the stone, that's perfectly fine. Closure comes when you're ready for it. Reverend Nathan and I will begin. And if you are ready now, we invite you to follow our lead and come forward.